Hi from Club Rabble. In addition to being a collection of great writers with our pulse on what's happening in Canada's progressive communities, we throw quite a party. This music is from one of our fundraising events last June in Ottawa, where our loyal supporters had the opportunity to come out and show their support for Rabble. Rabble.ca doesn't have any corporate owner or sponsor. We have no major foundation support. We get zero government dollars. What we are proud of is to have community support and donors like you. To show your support for Rabble.ca, why not become a monthly donor? Go to rabble.ca/donate to sign up. Join us all at Club Rabble. We're a bunch of cool cats. Keep the music, and especially the words, flowing. rabble.ca/donate.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
If there's one election issue no party can agree on, it's that institution of sober second thought, the Senate.
I've demonstrated that one can make a big change in the Senate without actually having to open up the Constitution as the others do.
Abolition, pure and simple. Mr. Trudeau thinks we need better senators. I think we need only former senators.
Until Stephen Harper ruined it by appointing a bunch of thugs, the Senate was a pretty useful, non-threatening part of our tradition.
There were 22 vacancies now. And how many people are noticing? What are the problems this is creating? None.
Welcome to the Rabble Book Lounge podcast. My name is Roshni Nair. Other than generating scandal after scandal, what does the Senate do again? Luckily, I have the answer to this question and more. My guest today is writer-activist Helen Forsey. She's also the daughter of late trade unionist and Senator Eugene Forsey, and she's written a new book called A People's Senate for Canada, Not a Pipe Dream. I called her in her home in Newfoundland. Here's my interview with Helen Forsey.
Hello.
Hi, Helen. It's Roshni.
Hi, Roshni. I'm here.
Perfect. So, I mean, I think the question of the Senate is a huge election issue, and all four major parties have something to say about it. And it's also the time where the Senate is just this deeply unpopular institution. And in your book, you quote your father, Senator Eugene Forsey, who says the Senate is always wrong. Either they're seen as an institution that oversteps the public will by actually, you know, blocking legislation, or they're seen as an institution of luxurious idleness, which is, I think, the phase that we're in right now with the Duffy trial and the Senate expense report.
That people seem to one way or another, it turns out that they always have the Senate in the wrong. He wasn't actually saying the Senate is wrong.
Right, right. He says that people think of it that way. But I think this idea that people have of the Senate really goes back to the fact that we're forgetting what the Senate is and what the Senate is supposed to do. So I'm hoping you can answer my first question, which is, what is the Senate?
Yeah, exactly. That we're forgetting, or we haven't even known really lately what the Senate was originally supposed to do and what it has done various times in the past. I think my father put it best when he said the Senate does much good, and then I'll come back to that. What kind of good? And it's too politically weak to do much serious harm. And I think that is key. And I think we should keep both characteristics. Now, the much good, he listed three main functions of it, one being the normal review and improvement sometimes of legislation that comes up from the Commons. They can also suggest their own legislation, but by and large it's Commons legislation, and most of that is government legislation. So they go through that and make drafting amendments and sometimes make something workable that otherwise wouldn't be, something that's got overlooked. They hold hearings on anything that seems to need it, that may be controversial or maybe unclear or something. and then they try and improve it. And usually those improvements, it happens in, 10 or 15% of cases, I think, and usually those improvements are just accepted by the Commons and it goes through. The second main function is investigation of public issues that may not be issues that the government particularly wants investigated or that would necessarily be receiving much public attention otherwise. But the Senate has done some very good investigations of not only controversial issues, but also of, what would you say, you quote, minority issues, things that about child poverty, that's not a minority issue, unfortunately, but things that maybe get neglected in the normal run of political affairs. And thirdly, although this doesn't happen, well, it doesn't happen as often as it should, but it doesn't happen too often anyway, because the Senate is a secondary body in a sense that it's not elected, so it doesn't have the same kind of mandate that the Commons does, but it can act as a protection of the interests and rights of citizens against abuse by the government. And that is something, we don't have too many of those protections left to us anymore, but the Senate can function that way. And if the Senate is independent and is made up of people appointed on merit rather than for partisan reasons, and we'll come back to that, mm-hmm. then it can and will do that and has done in the past. It was the Senate that forced the government to go to the people in a general election in 1988 when the free trade agreement bill came to them, and they said, well, we won't pass this until it's been before the electorate in a general election because it has not been adequately aired and discussed and debated. So they refused to pass the Commons bill until Mulroney won his majority and first passed the post majority, so it was a false majority, but anyway, in the Commons, and then the Senate probably rightly said, well, the people have spoken, and so we'll pass it.
Yeah. So, I mean, in recent times, how well do you think the Senate has been fulfilling those intentions?
Well, not very well since the present government got a majority in the Senate by appointing the latest 59 senators. And those senators have been appointed mainly or entirely, as far as I can tell, on the basis of partisanship. And they're clearly, it's funny, just this past week in the Duffy trial, a couple of weeks ago, Elizabeth May pinned down, in the leaders' debate, pinned down Stephen Harper and got him to admit that they expect the senators to do what the party wants, and the conservatives. Whereas the liberals, I will have to say this for them, they voted against Bill C-51, all except one of them, and they did not follow a party line. And so it wasn't just talk when they were freed from their partisan role and told that they were henceforth independents. They still have a sort of a liberal outlook, but they are not party people. They're not allowed to be active in the party, and they're not and they don't vote any party line.
I think what you touched upon too is the reaction to the Senate right now, and I thought maybe we could look at what all the parties are suggesting. So I mean, we'll start maybe with the NDP. They want to abolish the Senate. Does that make any sense, or is it even possible?
Well, I have two things to say about that. It is theoretically possible, but no matter what, it would take a long time. Remember Meech Lake? Those of us who are old enough to remember, Meech Lake had to, I think, just the process by which, there's a three-year period in which a resolution that needs unanimous consent, as Meech Lake did, or as abolishing the Senate would. A constitutional resolution that needs unanimous consent of all the provinces plus Parliament has a three-year period to get that unanimous consent. And if it and in the case of Meech Lake, at least one province had given its consent, and then the provincial government changed, and they withdrew that consent. So it is not a sure thing, until those 3 years are passed and you've got it all sewn up. So at the very best, from the point of view, best from the point of view of the abolitionists, because I think for the reasons given that it would be a bad idea to abolish the Senate, but even if you want to abolish the Senate, I can agree to disagree with the NDP on that, but it will nevertheless take considerable time. And that's if there were no complications, if everybody agreed, if there was a huge groundswell of abolitionist sentiment, more than there is now, because a lot of people are saying, let's reform it, rather than abolish it, and I'm glad of that. But even if all systems were go on abolition, it would still take several years. And I don't think all systems would be go by any means. There are certain provinces that have certainly, Quebec and the smaller provinces, the Maritimes anyway, and Newfoundland have said they will not go for abolition. So they would have to be persuaded. And then you'd get the provincial warlords, as my father used to call them, trying to insert their own little bits. Once you opened up the Constitution to changes, the provinces would each want, quite reasonably, if you like, want to insert something or other for their own benefit. And it would take way more than the 3 years. But anyway, supposing it only took 3 years, my second point is, meanwhile, we can do better. All we need is a declaration by whoever becomes prime minister that they will set up an independent body, a nonpartisan body that will receive nominations from the public and vet them and go through, you know, check them out and weigh them as the commission, I think it's called, that does that for the Order of Canada. The Order of Canada receives hundreds and hundreds of nominations for worthy members of the order every year, and they have this secretary at this office that goes through them, checks them out. It takes quite a while, but you could do that for the Senate. And then if the next prime minister says, I will abide by whatever that independent commission suggests for each province, it might be, there might be provincial, subcommittees or something of that commission. It could take various forms, and I think I hope people will have a lot of input to exactly how that's set up. But if a prime minister committed to that, that prime minister wouldn't be able to insert that into the Constitution. They would have no power to bind any future prime minister to doing the same thing. But once it was set up, and if it started to work and started to work well and people liked it, a future prime minister after that might have a bit of a problem on their hands trying to say, oh, no, I'm going to go back to the old patronage system.
Mm-hmm. And that appointment system, or the nonpartisan appointment process, is something that the Liberal Party has put in their platform.
Yes, I think Mr. Trudeau at that point had some very good advice and had the sense to follow it. And I'm pleased with that. I was worrying to my son a little while ago that somebody reading my book, because I do extol that particular decision and that particular pathway towards a better Senate, I said to my son, oh dear, I'm afraid some people reading my book are going to think I'm a liberal. And he said, no, Mom, don't worry about that. They won't. I think the Greens are also very sensible about that way of approaching the Senate. I haven't read an actual position on the Senate,
okay,
but I've actually had some word from Elizabeth that she likes what I propose in my book.
Yeah, although I was on their Green Party website this morning, and for them, they're suggesting, their resolution is to support the election of senators through a system that ensures proportional representation.
Good luck.
Yeah. Well, what is the problem with elected senators?
One reason for not going for election is because it would get us into the, it's not something that can be done without a great deal of, it would take a change in the Constitution. The Supreme Court was very clear on that and gave some very good reasons. So it would take opening up the Constitution with all the difficulties. It wouldn't be as hard as getting unanimous consent, but it'd be tough, especially since you know, Quebec would be right in there wanting wanting its, you know, the Meech Lake provisions and things reinstated if it was opened up at all. So which might or might not be a bad thing. I don't happen to agree that that would be a good thing, but I'm quite open to people disagreeing. The point is, it would take time. The second point is, that an elected Senate would, as my dad said, an elected Senate could say to the Commons, you represent the people, well, so do we. Mm-hmm. And if it were elected on a basis like preferential ballot or proportional representation, the Senate could say to the Commons, we represent the people better than you do. And at that point, you would have a lot of difficulty. You might have the kind of deadlock and conflict between two powerful bodies that you've got in the states that has pretty much stopped government altogether there at various times. And you might have a difficulty because of the question of confidence, the confidence convention, they call it, which states that it's pretty fundamental to our type of democracy. In parliamentary responsible government, our type of democracy, it's the elected commons that decides who will form the government. And if you had an elected commons and an elected senate, which one would decide who mm-hmm. formed the government? That would be another can of worms. And thirdly, do we really want more, you know, advertisements, more robocalls, more Fair Elections Act applying to even more of the parts of our governing system than what we already have? I know I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, so that kind of lays out what's wrong with that. I mean, I think people think elections, oh, that's more democratic, and then, you know.
Yeah. But there are a lot of things that are democratic that are particularly in the way of checks and balances, and that's one of the goals of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things that are not election-based that are nonetheless part of a mature democracy. A lot of sort of watchdog checks and balances, public safety commissions and things like that when they're properly handled are at arm's length from the government and are set up to criticize the government. Now, of course, to hold it to account. Now, of course, the Harper has done away with that because he fires the people that he disagrees with, but as with the Nuclear Safety Commission. But again, a Senate that was independent would be able to ride herd on that kind of thing and expose it and study it. And I think it would be harder for an autocratic government like this one to get away with that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, speaking of Harper, I mean, his strategy has been to stop appointing senators. Someone called it a death by attrition method. How constitutional is that?
Oh, it's not. It's absolutely not. John White, who is a constitutional scholar at the University of Regina, has made that perfectly clear. You can't simply do away with one of the fundamental elements of our constitutional system. You can't make something unicameral when it's bicameral, as they say, you know, two chambers of parliament instead of one. That would take a constitutional change, and it would be a big one. And you can't just cripple it. That would be against the way John White put it. Was he said it would be against constitutional law to do that. Now, even Harper himself, I almost never have anything positive to say about Harper, but Harper is not an absolute fool, and he did check. Usually facts don't make any difference to him. He may know them, but he doesn't pay any attention to them if they're not convenient for him. But he did admit that when he was talking about this moratorium idea, he said, now, we would have to keep a quorum. We would have to keep 15 or 20 senators just to pass legislation. But, of course, his view is, by that time, if it got down that low, they'd all be conservatives anyway, or at least a huge majority of them would be, of the 20 or so would be conservative, and he could just pass anything through that he wanted. I mean, that would be, as I said, as John White said, constitutionally illegitimate, against constitutional law. But suppose supposing that somehow he was able to get away with it, at least for a time, until he was taken to court, he admits that he would have to keep some.
Yeah.
I mean, supposing he were prime minister for life, he would still have to keep some senators there, just because everything otherwise, this business about reducing its budget to zero and everything that the NDP has put out there a couple of times, it's they're talking through their hats, because if you did that, you simply wouldn't be able to get any laws, any budgets, anything passed. They couldn't go to royal assent, because according to our Constitution, everything has to go through the Commons and the Senate before it gets royal assent. Sometimes the Senate, as recently in most cases, has just been a rubber stamp, but still, it still has to go through the Senate, so he'd have to keep the Senate.
Yeah, I think that's a great overview of all the party platforms and what they have to say about Senate reform.
Oh, thank you. I've talked your ear off. Thanks very much. This has been a wonderful opportunity.
That was my guest, activist writer Helen Forsey, on the Canadian Senate and Senate reform. Her new book is called A People's Senate for Canada, Not a Pipe Dream. You've been listening to an episode of the Rabble Book Lounge podcast. I'm Roshni Nair. Thanks for listening.